From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Ho, 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 it's seed season, among other festive reasons to celebrate in December. And today I invited a similarly seed-obsessed friend to help me curate some seed catalog recommendations you might not otherwise browse, and to talk seeds in general. More in a moment with Jennifer Jewell, whose latest book is What We Sow, on the personal, ecological, and cultural significance of seeds. But first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden comes from Color Blends Wholesale flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall. Also from High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, featuring 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project certified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
Jennifer Jewell is the creator of the popular Cultivating Place podcast, and her recent book is What We Sow, on the personal, ecological, and cultural significance of seeds. I'm so glad she's here today to talk about how she chooses a seed catalog to shop from and more. Hi, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Margaret? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, out there in Northern California, you're okay. And I'm here in upper New York State-ish, mid New York State-ish. Yeah. So we're opposite ends of the country.
But in the same season, right? The seed season.
Exactly. And I should say, before we get started with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I'll have a book giveaway of What We Sow, your book, which I can't even remember. I've lost track of time completely. I don't remember what month it even came out, but it's not long ago, really.
September. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mentioned in the introduction that I'd invited a similarly seed-obsessed friend to the show today. That would be you. And I wonder how, if you remember, kind of how you got keenly interested in seed, you know, beyond the obvious fact that you and I are both gardeners, but what happened? Do you remember what pushed the button for you to go really into seed?
Well, I went really deeply into seed as an adult when I first moved to Northern California. And it was kind of this, you know, I thought I was moving to a similar climate as Central Colorado. I didn't really understand how different it was going to be, Margaret. I didn't understand how different the plants were, how different the climate was. And as a gardener, I failed miserably that first year. I just thought, I'll plant the same things I planted in Colorado. Like, it's drought friendly. It's, you know, it's coldish, it's warmish, it's dryish. I should be fine. But the difference in the like characteristics of the wet, of the dry, of the cold just threw me for a loop. So at the same time, the native plant biodiversity of California just blew my mind. And I'm in Northern Interior California, which is a, you know, a specific plant palette of its own. And I was blown away. It was like learning a foreign language or being in a foreign country. And you know how all of your senses are just on alert all the time, seeing things you're not accustomed to. And so that really sent me down a rabbit hole, if you will, of like, what were the plants? What did their seeds look like? Because I moved here in a season of seediness. And so they were really apparent all the time, that first few months of me living here. So that was really like a big, and I was 35, I think, when I moved here. So, this was like an adult falling in love story, not a young gardener falling in love story, but it was equally like love at first sight.
In a recent, I guess this fall, we did a New York Times garden column together about your book, and you recounted to me the anecdote of how you and your partner John were traveling when the pandemic began, and you'd expected to be away for weeks and weeks, and so you hadn't ordered seeds. You were going to miss, I guess, the spring, at least, vegetable growing season and so forth. And it was like this panic took hold, not just the panic that we all had, but the panic of like, we're going to get home and we're not going to have any seed to grow anything. So I think it was during that first part of the pandemic sort of lockdown period that you started writing this book. Mm-hmm. Did that all kind of connect? Is that what got you started on What We Sow? And tell us just the sort of short version of what We Sow is about.
Well, you know, it was like that was the impetus right there, was this moment of, and I think a lot of gardeners, you experienced it, like many of us experienced it, where we went to place our orders. And again, we were kind of late because all of a sudden we had a season that we weren't supposed to be home in the garden handed back to us. And so we thought, well, we should probably order seeds, which is something we do every year. Even though we might have some leftovers from the year before, or even the year before that. And when I got, you know, out of order, back ordered, not available, I was like, whoa, this is weird. And when I started doing a little more sort of research into what was happening, I realized just how much I didn't know about our seed supply. Like, I have my 5 to 10 favorite catalogs that come, I look through them, I dog ear them, and I make, you know, a small amount of order, like in the spring and then in the summer, you know, so, or in the winter for the spring and then in the summer for that late summer, early fall planting. And that's what set me on the path of writing What We Sow, which is in essence a gardener's primer on the state of seed in our world and all the different kind of adjacent fields of interest, whether it's seed banks or seed libraries or seed consolidation or seed degradation or biodiversity loss or the seed renaissance, the small seed growing renaissance, the seed protection and advocacy by peoples of culture around the globe. All of these things kind of came to play. And like things I had never thought of, like, why do we have all this information on the seed packets? And why is it the law? And how did that come to be? It was fascinating to write about. And it's, you know, it's an overview from a gardener's perspective, not a research scientist, not a seed scientist, but a gardener who was very interested.
Right. So, you know, before we even sort of get to some virtual shopping confess some of the things we're on the lookout for and so forth, but, and that we always grow and that kind of stuff. But I know we each apply a sort of a filter to which catalogs, and you just kind of mentioned, you know, there might be 5 to 10 that you dog ear and so forth. So what are some of the qualifications to be one of your dog-eared catalogs? What does a catalog have? Because I mean, I know neither of us patronizes the sort of big brands, the kinds that sort of show up in the mailbox of millions of people, whether you request a copy or not, which shall remain unnamed, you know, and they serve their purpose because they get a lot of people into gardening because they do that mass, you know, promoting, marketing. But you and I are in like another place. And so what are some of the qualifications to be on your list?
Well, especially after doing the research and writing What We Sow, where, you know, one of the threads is all about consolidation of control and which often results in contraction of what's on offer and sometimes compromise of how it's being offered. I really am going more and more as I age for the small independent growers and seed sellers who are within my region more or less. So I really want to support those seed sellers who and seed growers who were able to supply us with seed even in the face of a global pandemic and a global like supply shutdown. So that is one of the criterias. Because of our, you know, growing and certainly longstanding concerns about biodiversity loss, climate change, and ecological warfare being conducted on our planet. I want all of my seed to be either naturally or organically grown. Whether it's organically certified or not is less important to me than whether or not they are like living the intention of ecological respect and integrity.
Yes.
Then the final thing is that I want to know that some major proportion of the seeds they are growing and selling are open pollinated and heirloom. So that, and the heirloom maybe is a little bit less, but I it's definitely one of the ones that I note, like, yeah, I want to be a person that buys that seed and helps keep it in the supply chain. And I want to feel like my order matters to these companies, that, that I am helping this ground level advocacy and activism in many ways, Margaret, like keep going.
Yes. And because this is the basis of life. I mean, even if you eat meat, the animals are mostly herbivorous and they they eat something that came from a seed. You know what I mean? And
yes.
And you know, a chicken, forages. And so whatever you eat and that you thrive and survive on, a lot of it goes back to the seed. And of course, all of it goes back to the soil.
Right.
But, you know, it goes back to the seed in most plants that we rely on. And so it's very big. I'm the same way. I want to shop at organic or the equivalent. Again, I don't care if they do the certification as long as they don't use the chemicals and they follow ethical practices and so forth. And I really like companies that tell me where their seed came from. Like either they grow it themselves on their own farm or some of it themselves on their own farm. Or they say, we're so proud we got seed from this person and this person and this person. And here, meet these wonderful seed farmers that we work with. I love that, as opposed to this, like, goodness knows where in the world it came from, someplace that was like a desert, you know, probably where it's easier to grow seed, you know, less fungal diseases, or I don't know what, you know, that I don't, that is nothing like my backyard. Do you know what I mean? Regionally.
Oh, yes.
And so regional is important. And I also love that the small guys tend to have, like we all do, obsessions, and they tend to almost like adopt particular crops and nurture them. Do you know what I mean? Like, like they're like, they have a particular beet that they really love, and this beet means everything to them, but they read about how it used to be this big or taste this way or do this thing or that thing, you know, its performance, and they want to get it back to that way. So they're like doing selection over generations and generations and generations of seed to make it like it once was, as you spoke about the heirlooms, you know, bring it back to that quality.
Yeah.
And again, not hybrids, the open pollinated, not the hybrids. So I love those specialists, like, you know, Frank Morton of Wild Garden Seed and all his, I mean, I was, he got like more than 125 kinds of lettuce that he's bred. And, you know, these are the people who have changed our salad bowl and our plate, dinner plate and our,
for the better, like change it for the better, because there's a ton of lettuce out there you don't necessarily want in your salad bowl also.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know if you know Glenn Drowns at Sandhill Preservation Center, been at it for a long time. And I mean, it's, you know, more than 150 kinds of like winter squash and a couple of hundred kinds of sweet potatoes. And, you know, collections, lifelong collections, a passion, of genetic material that would otherwise be lost forever.
Yes.
You know, so that's what turns me on, is those types of people. Yeah.
And that history and that stewarding, like it grows the best of humanity as well as the best of the food for humanity. Like it's art, right? There's this artistry to that length of research and relationship that has led to these collections. Like it's really like, it gives me the shivers, actually.
Yes, it does. It does. It does. Because it's not like collecting stuff, like things, inanimate things. No, it's stewardship. It really is. It's a relationship. Yeah. It's intimate.
Yeah.
So you're Western, and you said you go regional where you can. So what are some Western, I've gathered some names from, the Southeast, where I occasionally dabble in purchasing some seed too,
yes.
even though I'm in the Northeast. And so what are some of the places that you go to and why?
And, it is so interesting because I get catalogs from everywhere. And, there are the ones on the East Coast that I'm just like, oh, I want to try that and that. I mean, when I get my emails from Hudson Valley Seed or Southern Exposure, I'm like, oh, but by and large, I try and stick to my Western. And again, I go out a little bit out of my exact region. And at this point, my most local is called Redwood Seeds. And it's a small company founded by a couple. They're probably about 2 hours north of me. And they're just doing a fantastic job. And so that's the first one. The next one is called Living Seed Company. And it is over on the coast. So the coast is really, really different. But sometimes they have seeds that I can't find from Redwood Seeds, which is on the interior, so much drier. Mm-hmm. And Territorial Seed is up in Oregon. They have a fantastic big selection and they have a wonderful history of advocacy and education. Renee's Garden Seed is down in Southern California, or its headquarters is, or I guess it's Central California, but it's way south of me. Mm-hmm. They're probably the biggest catalog, and she's very consistent, very reliable, and I love the work she's done for the industry as a woman leader in this field. One of the ones, the two that are sort of outside of my range when I'm talking about vegetable seeds is High Desert Seed, which was a favorite of mine when I lived in Colorado, and this woman-owned company is out of Let me get this right. The western slope of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, in the town of Paonia, which interestingly, I grew up going to at a family cabin that my mother and father bought while my father was doing his PhD research in Paonia. And so they have like some really interesting high elevation seed research and trials and selections. And they have a wonderful, going back to your statement about how we love companies that actually give credit and uplift the growers who are in yes. their collaboratives. Like they have the most wonderful stories of, where their seed came from and who their growers are. So I love that page. And then the next one, I have three more. One is the Native Seed Search Group
yes.
out of the Tucson area. Really interesting native and indigenous heritage seeds, a lot that go only to the indigenous communities there, but then many that are available to the public as well. And just so much research and advocacy and kind of capacity building in their seed growing network for the benefit of these indigenous communities through indigenous leadership. So I love their work. And I love toying with native seeds, mm-hmm. Margaret. I love collecting them and I love looking for them. And the two that are my go-tos are Seed Hunt, which is out of Southern California, but she collects all over the state. And this is another woman-owned endeavor by Ginny Hunt. And she just has some fantastic selections.
Native plants. Okay.
Native, mm-hmm. some non-natives as well, like interesting, hard to find non-natives, mm-hmm. But a lot of really good natives, like excellent mm-hmm. buckwheats, Eriogonums, and Clarkias, fantastic. And then Theodore Payne Foundation in LA has some great native plant seeds. So, I know you did that great piece on the Northwest Meadowscapes, another great one. But again, just a little far north and damper than me. That's like my next level.
And he is spreading. I mean, they're. It's a couple who owns that seed company, and they're
yeah.
widening the area that they're
focal areas,
and so
yeah.
forth. Yeah, and yeah. it's interesting because you are in Northern California, parts of Northern California, parts of Oregon and Washington. a lot of prime seed growing land in this country, right?
Is traditional.
Because of the way the pattern of when the rainfalls do and don't come, and you know, you don't want it seed harvest time, you don't want it to be pouring all the time. And traditionally that was an advantage in these areas, and there's lots of other reasons, but I'm oversimplifying. But anyway, so there's a lot of seed companies. I mean, you have, there's mm-hmm. other ones in your in your wider region. For instance, Siskiyou Seeds.
Oh, I mean, Siskiyou
he's got,
Seeds,
you know, Don Tipping's got like, I don't know, 700 different kinds of, you know, edibles and flowers and herbs and whatever.
Yeah.
And Peace Seedlings.
Peace Seeds, so good. And Peace, I saw that, let's see, I think High Desert Seed and Redwood Seed both attributed Alan Capular with many of their seed selections.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, which is
and
great.
So, yes, yeah. Yes. And
no, they're and, excellent.
Yeah, and so... So
Ed
there
Hume
are,
is another one
yes,
up there.
Yes.
I mean, you're right. Like, and just north of me, like that jump over the border makes a huge difference in their capacity to grow seed at really big scale.
Yes. Yeah. So Uprising Seeds and
right.
Adaptive Seeds, you know, some of my favorites. And these are northern enough that a lot of times, even though I'm in the Northeast, the things are short season. They're not long season crops. So as opposed to, you know, they work for me. And you know, like Adaptive has, you know, I don't know, more than a dozen different kales, for instance. And, you know, on the other hand, if I wanted collards, who has more than a dozen? Well, Southern Exposure Seed Exchange. And if I wanted to try collards, you know what I mean? If I wanted to have fun with
Thank you, Ira Wallace.
Yeah. It's not going to be
collard
my main
project,
my main crop, but yeah. So lots of, and you mentioned your like most local ones, and my most local ones are Hudson Valley Seed, which you did mention, and Turtle Tree Seed, which is biodynamic, which is right near me as well.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's something to, you know, shop local, right?
Well, and then as we know, like one of the issues, which you've already kind of touched on, is that you can grow seed really well in other areas, but it's then not necessarily adapted if you want to save seed and grow it on and on and on. So these growers are doing some of the adapting for us if they are growing them in our area. And then we know the seed is resistant to when we do have damp, when we do have drought, when we do have cold spells. And that's like an interesting balance, right? Between getting a seed that's going to be great this year, but may not be well adapted over time, and versus seed that might be really well adapted over time, but may not have the exact, like, I don't know, like greatness the very first year. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same reason that the fact that seed is alive and that over the generations, you know, it will adapt to the conditions that it's grown in. It will subtly, in subtle ways, it will change. It will evolve, you know, to adapt to the conditions. And that's the same reason I want seed that's grown organically or in those, because I don't want seed that expects me to intervene. And I say expects, you know, anthropomorphizing the seed, but that expects me to intervene if something's going wrong, you know, and nuke it. Now, speaking of nuke it, we have, you know, maybe only three or four minutes left. And I just want to, one of the most chilling things in the book is, you know, how we've poisoned seed. We've done a lot of bad things to seed. We've made it disappear. So many varieties have disappeared because we've turned it into intellectual property that you can patent and all these kinds of crazy things. But we've also poisoned it. So just for a couple minutes, just tell us about that and about that's another reason to buy organic seed, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you are voting with your dollar and, you know, your economic power for a world that does not poison the heck out of everything. And, you know, the rate at which our seed, our commodity level seed, is being pre-treated with, you know, whether it's Roundup Ready toolkit or it's the, you know, insecticides and neonicotinoids, like, I believe the EPA now says that every bit of non-organic corn, and there are millions of acres planted out in corn in the U.S. today. All of it that is not organic is now treated with either herbicides or herbicide-resistant and or neonicotinoids.
Yeah.
That goes directly, not just into the plant, which then is the food, which is then the pollen, which then, you know, contaminates the non-treated seed and corn pollen within many miles. Like the reach of the wind pollinated corn pollen is phenomenal, but it's also leaching into our soils, into our ground and surface waters, and it contaminates all the lives that are supposed to make their lives there. Like, it's astronomical. And we keep pounding away at this, and we think that it's, oh, we should ban Roundup, right? But sadly, you can ban DDT, thank you, Rachel Carson, and you can maybe ban Roundup, but there are like 18 to 20 chemicals on the market or being readied for the market right behind Roundup, so that our use of pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, biocides, which is Rachel Carson's word for them,
kills everything, right?
is increasing, not decreasing.
Right.
And it's connected to so many of the health issues in our environment and in our lives, in our own bodies and lives. And we just have to say, let's try without this. Let's go back to figuring out ways to not use chemicals.
Yeah.
They should be, in my opinion, regulated like weapons, or better than we regulate weapons. That's how strong they are.
Yeah. So we've run out of time, of course, but that vote with your seed dollars is what we're saying. Vote for a safer environment with your seed dollars by putting them, giving them to companies that don't do that, don't treat the seed. Well, Jennifer, you and I could talk forever and ever because we're two similarly, as I said, seed obsessed people. But thank you for sharing some of your sources, and I'll make a good list to go with the transcript of the show. And as I said, we'll have a book giveaway of What We Sow, of your your newest book. So thank you for making time today.
Oh, thank you very much, and happy seed shopping in this
thank
season.
You.
Okay. Bye.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy seed shopping meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden comes from Color Blends Wholesale flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall. Also from High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, featuring 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project certified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.